Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am truly grateful. Okay. I think there's three things that you need to have to be a member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, these are just the things that were taught to me, but it doesn't say that anywhere. It's just some of the things that I've been taught. And that's a sobriety date, and I just gave you that. I got sober in Texas, and they say if you don't give your sobriety date, it's probably because you don't have one. And the second is that I have an AA sponsor, and I do, and her name is Ellen Aldridge. And the third is that I have a home group, and I do, and it's Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting. And I'm really grateful that I have all three of those. And when I go to Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting, I am there no matter what. And for me, it's important for me to be in my seat on the second row, second seat in, every Monday night. And I once heard this lady say in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she said, "Oh, take a risk. Sit somewhere else." No. Even if a newcomer sits in my seat, I'll say, "Honey, let me get you a chair, and we're going to sit right here. That's my seat. It's been my seat for 10 years. And I'm really grateful to be here today, and I want to thank Ben for inviting me. It's been it's just fabulous. You guys have got a fabulous Unity Day. I love that because I think that's so important because that's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, our unity. And I'd like to thank Clem and Lisa for picking me up. It's always fun to see Clem and Lisa. I get to come to Sacramento from time to time, and it's really neat. And they always host me and drive me around, and it's just lots of fun. I've also got to see some friends that I don't see for a while. You know, I don't know about you, but before I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody was coming to see me. And today it's really nice because Lucille and I were friends down in Southern California, and she retired and moved up here, and I haven't seen Sheila in a long time, and she lived in Southern California, and meeting Patsy, my new friend. It's just, these are the things, it's the benefits you get to have in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I'll tell you about Ted. Ted is your speaker tonight. And Ted and I belong to the same home group, Monday Night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting. So we get to see each other every Monday night. And here lately, we are traveling together on the weekend. So, I mean, we're starting all kinds of rumors in Alcoholics Anonymous. But at any rate, it's so fun, and I just feel so privileged to be able to be a part of your Unity Day. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and the thing that sold me on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was the fellowship. And Arthur, how am I doing with this mic? I don't want to knock my teeth out. I was told that I really needed to stay close to the mic, and I kind of get animated, and I'll probably bang my face into it. But I love the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no way that I could focus on the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing about service, but I loved the fellowship, and I still do. And that's what we call Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting. We call it celebrating sobriety because we go there and there's a lot of sobriety and it's a lot of fun and it's the fellowship at its finest. And what's really neat is the reason it's the fellowship at its finest is because the people in that room are working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of the people in that room are in service in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I feel really blessed. I'm going to tell you later on about some of the things that are going on in my life. And I have one of these AA stories. You know, a lot of speakers get up to the podium and they start telling you, "Gosh, I got sober and I got this and pretty soon I'm driving a Cadillac and I got a business and boy, things are going great." Well, I don't have one of those stories. I kind of have one of those riches to rags story. But what I have learned, and I think that I have experienced more surrenders in my life in the past 3 years than I have experienced in all of the 16 previous. And I'm really grateful for that, because I was listening to Earl talk today, and I really believe what Earl was saying. And he was saying, you know, if you don't experience the pain, you don't experience the surrender. And I don't know, but I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a real alcoholic, and I've got the kind of head that when my life is sailing along good, I just sort of kind of sometimes forget things. And I forget to be grateful, and I forget to see how good my life really is. And I just want you to know that at 19 years of sobriety, I am more active in Alcoholics Anonymous than I have ever been. I sponsor more people than I have ever sponsored, and I go to more meetings than I've ever gone to. Because at 19 years of sobriety, I have so much more to lose. If I were to lose what I have today, I would lose my entire life. Because everything that I have in my life today is because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life is the very best I could have ever imagined. And I want you to also know that I have learned that I am one of the richest women on earth. And it has absolutely nothing to do with money. But all I ever wanted out of life was to be wanted, loved, and needed. And I have that today in spades. I have so many gifts in my life that I absolutely cannot. Sometimes I'm just so overwhelmed with all the love that I have in my life that I can just barely stand it. And that's because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And you allowed me to love you. And I was able to reach out and help another alcoholic. And in doing that, I slowly began to have some love for myself. Now, I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can't love anybody else till you can love yourself. Well, I tell you what, if I had waited till I loved myself, I would have done nothing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I needed to do is I suffer from a spiritual disease. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me I'm suffering from a spiritual malady. And I had to reach out to another alcoholic and begin to love you. And by loving you, I began to love me. And what I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is what I give out is what I get back. And I began to do that. And I don't have that all the time. And I think that sometimes we need to say that, because I used to sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, I would hear these things about how everybody was starting to feel really good about themselves and they'd been sober for a long time. And I thought, well, why don't I feel like that? You know, I'm sober for a long time, and what I've done is I've sat down with some people that have long-term sobriety, and I found out that they really don't feel that way either. What happens is I get to feel it sometimes, and that sometimes makes me keep wanting to keep doing what I'm doing, because as Johnny H. says, if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you're getting. And I really, 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 really like what I'm getting. Because what I'm doing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous makes me feel so good. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a God that even resembled the God I have today. Because besides being a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of old ideas about God. And what I have learned from Clancy is that I have a disease of perception. And I don't know if Arthur has any of Clancy's tapes. Alcoholism, a disease of perception. But if you don't have that tape, I highly encourage you to get it. Because what I've learned, and I love what Ray said today, he says, I have to keep busy because I am with me, I and myself, and all three of those together is really going to screw me up, or something like that. I can't remember exactly how you put it, but it was so good. I'll have to get that again, and I'll always give you credit, Ray. But I'll find out exactly how it goes. But I understand that because it's this head. And what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is I have a head that's out to get this body all the time. And I don't care how long I sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a disease called alcoholism. And I need to keep suiting up and showing up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I have to treat the ism. You know, I'm 19 years between drinks. That's a long time between drinks. But I've got a disease that's out to get me every single day. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that the disease rests in the mind. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that alcohol is but a symptom. We have to get down to the causes and conditions. So today, I know that my problem rests in the mind. And I need to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous so that you can keep me in touch with reality. Because without you, I don't have a clue what reality is. And we hear a lot around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we talk about denial. And some of the old-timers in this program have pointed out to me that Bill doesn't talk about denial in the big book. He talks about delusion. And denial is to know what the truth is and to do the opposite anyway. Delusion is not to have a clue what the truth is. And that's what I am. I am delusional. My thinking is delusional. And I need you to keep me in touch with reality because my perception of reality is distorted. And that's what Clancy taught me in Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception. I don't see things the way they really are. I don't hear things the way they really are. I simply have a distorted perception of reality. Now, I was sitting in these Baptist churches, and what I heard there was not what my mother heard there. My mother's still there, and she never heard what I heard. But somehow or another, I heard these preachers as they slammed their fists on the podium and their faces got red and their veins stood out and they leaned into the congregation and said things like, "If you've thought it, you've done it." And I just knew that already I was just this horrible, horrible person because of the way I thought. And I tell you, I heard something that just knocked me over last weekend. And this is from a guy named Sterling. And Sterling, I don't know if some of you know him down in Sacramento, but Sterling says, "I may not walk like I talk, but thank God I don't walk like I think." And, you know, I love it. Some days I think I would scare people if I said, "Do you know what I'm thinking?" So thank God I don't walk like I think. But I thought that one was the best, and that's the perception, the disease of perception. And what I heard those Baptist preachers say was that everything I thought was going to get me to hell, and I was going to burn in hell forever. And somehow or another, I just couldn't understand, as a little bitty girl, how I got so bad so fast. And I started to take on this hopeless, helpless attitude of there's no way I'll ever be enough for God. There is absolutely no way that I will be enough. And also, I heard these people say that if you want to get to God, you have to come through us. And I also heard these people say that God lives somewhere up in the sky. And I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you gave me the big book. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me where God is. And it says God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God. And it says to search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand him, expresses himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. God has never sent me a fax, but he has always sent me one of you. And I love the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I can come into these rooms and you can speak to me and your voice is louder than my head. And I need your voice in Alcoholics Anonymous because I need you to be louder than my head. And I'm so grateful. Also, I have a higher power who has a dynamite sense of humor, and I want to share that with you. My name is Polly, And Paula was sitting up here. It's not Paula and it's not Pauline, it's Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. And it's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I don't know if any of you are sensitive, but I am really sensitive. And I don't like to be teased and I don't like to be laughed at. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. The result is always positive. And today, I love having the name Polly. Because I can walk into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There's just not very many Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something. Because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift. Because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. 15 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. And what I will assure you is you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So we have a rule around here, newcomer, that's called Rule 62. Just don't take yourself so damn serious. I hope I make it through this talk. I was told to talk really loud. And it's like I'm fading more and more. Earl was talking today about alcoholism in your family. And he had all of us raise our hands if anybody drank heavy. And I'm not even sure that my grandfather drank heavy. It's just that he was the only person in our family who drank. My mother and daddy did not drink. My daddy died when he was 60 years old, and he had 60 years of sobriety. My mother is now 78 years old, and she has 78 years of sobriety. So I'm living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from the disease of alcoholism. I did not grow up in a home where alcoholism was being practiced. So it's like all the things, you know, we have a lot of blaming that we do around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got the disease because of this, 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 and this. And all that may absolutely contribute to the disease. But there are a lot of people who have all that going on and they're not alcoholic. And you have a lot of people come to these rooms that don't have that going on and they're still alcoholic. What that tells me is what the book tells me. And that is that I have a disease. And that disease is alcoholism. And that disease is physical, mental, and spiritual. And I know today that I have a disease that is hopeless of mind and body. And without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am doomed to suffer from a disease called alcoholism. And thanks to this program, you treat my disease on a daily basis. And I'm really grateful today that I know that. So I couldn't go around saying my parents gave it to me. But one of the things that I would do is people would say, Polly, identify with the feelings. And I began to identify. And a lot of the things that happened in my home happened in your home, but there was no alcohol there. And those were the kind of things that I began to identify with. And I began to take on those feelings. Because, you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am selfish and self-centered. Selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of our disease. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. And what happened was, what was ever going around my family, whatever was happening between my mom and dad, I was certain had something to do with me. I have always thought everything had something to do with me. If you're talking, if you're angry, if you're not happy, it must be my fault. That was the kind of self-absorption I had when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you began to tell me the truth. Now, also, I come from a family of where I am the only child. I was absolutely loved and adored by my parents. If there was ever any abuse done to me, that abuse was that I was loved too much. And if I sound like I'm putting people down who've had abuse, please, please, I'm not doing that. Because I work with a lot of women in this program, and there is some pretty horrific things that have happened to these women. I'm just trying to say that it's a disease, and I cannot have that happen, or they can have it happen, and we can still end up in the same AA meeting, sitting in the same chairs with the same disease. And I believe that I have a disease. And it's not that I don't believe all those other things need treating. I do. But what I'm trying to say is you don't have to have those things happen to be an alcoholic. It's not necessary. It didn't happen to me, and I am a real alcoholic. And today I'm grateful that I know that. But what I began to notice was, as you would talk about your alcoholic moms and your alcoholic dads, that a lot of those same feelings had happened to me. And I believe with all my heart that the only difference between my dad and I is my dad just didn't take a drink. Everything else was there. My father was a man who was full of rage. And he would have these fits of rage just like a periodic alcoholic. And I thought that rage had something to do with me. If I just be better or do better, then Daddy wouldn't have one of his fits, as my mother called them. And I know today that those fits had nothing to do with me. But I looked at my father the same way I've heard you talk about your alcoholic father, and I said, I'll never be like that. And then my mother, I felt like she was just such a wimp. She wouldn't stand up for herself. She just let all this stuff happen. And I just looked at her, and I was just so ashamed of her. And I said, there's no way I'll ever be like you. And the irony of it is, because of a disease called alcoholism, I seemed to pick up the most negative things about my parents. And I became an angry wimp. One of these people that's just true. Full of rage, but can't stand up for myself. And I believe that that's what the disease of alcoholism is a disease of negativity. I mean, I could be gloom and doom all the time. You know, I could have all these thousands of wonderful things going on in my life, and I'm going to tell you about the one thing that's not good, the one thing that's not perfect. And, of course, the big book also talks about perfectionism. That's one of our characteristics. That's one of our character defects is perfectionism. It's like everything. I can't be grateful for the good. I only focus on the bad. And I believe that it's a disease of negativity, and I'm always focusing on the bad. But thanks to you, when I come into an AA meeting and I'm whining about something, you know, somebody's going to be there that's louder than my head, and they're going to say, but Polly, look at this, 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 and this. And by doing so, I get out of that whole realm of self-pity and begin to focus on all the blessings and all the gifts that I have because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I had married my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And at 18 years, I took a drink of alcohol. I had heard that people who drank were bad. That's what I heard the church tell me. And all these people that I hung around with were not bad. These were good people. And I had hoped to meet two of the women that I knew. And while my ex-husband and I were in the Air Force, I was to meet them today, but that did not come true. One I haven't seen in almost probably about 28 years, and another one I haven't seen in 15 years. Now, I know a lot of people that we hung out with in the Air Force, and none of those people are in Alcoholics Anonymous, and furthermore, none of them need to be. I'm the only one of that circle of our friends that's in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So to me, it had nothing to do with the way they drank, because you see, they weren't a real alcoholic. I was the real alcoholic. And I took a drink of alcohol, and I don't remember any big deals happening. And I didn't progress to the morning drink. I simply started with the morning drink. Because in the Air Force we have coffees and they serve more than coffees. So it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers in the morning, sherry before lunch, martinis before dinner, and Black Russians and Stingers after. And it never, ever occurred to me for a very long time there was anything wrong with my drinking. I am not one of these people that just, you know, took a drink of alcohol and it went down, it went out to the ends of my fingers, and I just turned into Rita Hayworth. That's not what happened. Now, that's what happened to my husband. He took a drink of alcohol and he chased that feeling until the days he entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not my story. I've been told if you hang around these rooms, you're going to hear somebody tell your story or you're going to see something that talks about your story. And one time I went into an Al-Anon club and I saw a sign hanging on the wall and it told my story. And it said the chains of alcoholism were too soft to be felt until they were too strong to be broken. I didn't even know I had a disease till I couldn't do anything about the disease. And I had these two little boys. Along came these children, and we're living up in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. I mean, it is absolutely the last jumping off spot before nowhere. And it's like 50 below zero in the winter, and this was in the winter, and you can't send children out to play. And I had these two little boys. I didn't have a clue how to be a parent. And I was doing all the things to these little boys that my parents had never done to me. I was screaming and yelling at these little boys and calling them names and treating. I had no control over myself. I was so abusive to these little boys. And they were driving me crazy. And I ended up going to an Air Force doctor and he said, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was drinking alcohol and taking Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimitol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. And what happened is I have learned along the way that this is a family disease. And that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. And that the disease of alcoholism traumatizes children. What we do to our children and the message we send because of our disease absolutely devastates their lives. And today I understand that. Because you see, I can talk about being a couch potato alcoholic. But you see, from the perception of my little boy's eyes, My son is sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to hear James talk. And James talks about his mother being passed out on the sofa, but he didn't know that she was passed out. And this little boy walks back and forth in front of that sofa, gripped with terror, because his dad is gone, and he's certain that his mother is dead. And that's what happens to children in homes where alcoholism is being practiced. I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps, because when we say the Serenity Prayer, so many times, you know, we say, give me the courage to accept the things that God grant me, the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And sometimes we just sort of stop there. You know, well, I can't do anything about it, and these are my children, and they'll just have to, you know, I'll just live one day at a time, and they'll just have to learn to get over it. But there's another part to that Serenity Prayer, and it's the courage to change the things I can. And I am so grateful for the ninth step, because it is in the ninth step that we can begin to make restitution for our behavior as practicing alcoholics. And because of the ninth step and the previous eight steps, you gave me the courage to be able to go to my children and sit them down and tell them how sorry I am because I am a child abuser. And I was able to say these things to my children, and I didn't have to say, you shouldn't feel that way. Because you see, Their feelings were entirely appropriate for the situation. They felt the way they felt because of what was happening to them. And today I'm grateful that you did just what Earl said. You gave me the ability to listen to my children's pain and how they felt about living in the rooms of alcoholism and living with a mother who sent a message to them, you are of no value. And I'm so grateful because, you see, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that if we do these things and we practice these principles and we take these steps, that great events will come to pass. And great events have come to pass. Because, you see, those two sons have given me a love beyond my greatest expectation. In fact, I talked to my youngest son yesterday on the telephone, and he has started kind of doing this when he knows I'm going out of town to talk. And he says, Mom, you tell those people that your son really loves you. And you see, there's nothing in the world that could buy me that. But the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that. And I love what Albert M. says. I can't save my children. You have to save my children. But you know what? I'll save yours. Because you see, that's the way it works. And a lady that I 12-stepped in Alcoholics Anonymous is the woman who brought my son to his first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the way it works. I'll take care of your kids, and you take care of mine. At any rate, I don't go into a long drunkalogue, and I jump all over the place, as you can probably tell. But I slept through it, and so would you. So I don't talk much about being a couch potato alcoholic is very, very boring. And I came alive when I got sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And somebody once told me, Polly, you go to meetings like most people go to cocktail parties. And that's probably true, because I love to talk to everybody. I like to see everybody. And I just absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am at my very best when I'm with you. When I'm with you, I'm at my very best. And I came into these rooms absolutely so devastated. And I'd like to tell you how I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was always passed out on my sofa. And my husband jerked me up one night and he sat me at the kitchen table and he said, alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just wouldn't drink and if you just wouldn't take those pills, everything would be okay. And he started pouring out the booze. He threw the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of looked at him in my comatose state, and I went back and I passed out. Now, I had taken to drinking things like NyQuil cough medicine, vanilla extract, and Scope. And I had ceased to go to sleep and wake up. I came to and passed out. And I came to probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I needed to drink really bad because I had the shakes. And I didn't know if I could drive to the 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil. And that night, I found myself crawling around my garage floor, going through those plastic bags to just get a drink. Because, you see, I had reached that place in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. And I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol or I would surely die. And that night, my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had a car wreck in Irving, Texas. And I'm a blackout drinker, so I'll just make a very long story short to tell you that I called the police, and I told the police that my car had been stolen. Gosh, I can't even remember my own story. That my car had been stolen. And here comes the police with my husband. And I'm taken to the Irving police station. And I get to see that look in the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And that policeman looked at me with so much disgust. And then he looked at my husband and he said, just take her home and sober her up. And on the way home, he said, there's a treatment center and it's not far from my house and I wish you would come. I wish you would go. And that night I entered treatment for the first time. Now this was definitely no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And I went into this treatment center and they started taking us to a lot of AA meetings. And right away I had, one of these Jenner House romances, you know, where Sick falls in love with Sick and you walk off into happy destiny. I did that. I was always looking for somebody, you know, to co-sign my bullshit, and this guy definitely did. And we stayed sober for 58 days. And the man who would become my first sponsor 12-stepped me out of a motel in Euless, Texas, and brought me back into that treatment center more dead than alive. I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I absolutely did not believe that I could stay sober. I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. Because, you see, sober, I couldn't stand the kind of mother I'd become and the kind of daughter I'd become and the kind of wife I'd become. And I've heard in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I just knew that there was no way that I could live sober. And you see, I just defined the disease of alcoholism. I couldn't live sober inside my own skin. The first time I heard Clancy talk about alcoholism, the disease, I was driving in my car and almost wrecked it because Clancy said, the disease of alcoholism has nothing to do with alcohol. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the disease rests in the mind, and the disease is patient, very, very patient. And today I know that if I don't treat the disease so that I can maintain a sense of comfort inside my own skin, I will surely, surely drink again. And that's for me. And the big book gives me time after time. It gives me a story where a man stopped drinking for 20 years because he had something going on in his life. And when that was no longer going on and he sat back to rest and rock in his rocking chair, he took a drink of alcohol and he was dead in a month. I know that the disease of alcohol is patient. The disease of alcoholism is very patient. And you see, if alcohol were my problem, then these would turn out well people. Because I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 19 years. So alcohol is not the problem. Alcoholism is the problem. And I just knew I couldn't stay sober. So I left that treatment center and I got a bottle of scotch and a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel. I believe that everybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has an Eskimo. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, that might be, you may be here because your mom or dad said, you know, living in this house, we just can't watch you hurt yourself anymore. Or maybe it's a spouse that says you're destroying the rest of the family with your drinking. Maybe you're here because you got a nudge from the judge. Maybe you're here because your employer says, if you don't get your act together, you can't work here anymore. Whatever. Somehow, some way, we're led to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life. And she knew absolutely nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And today I know that something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way, and she pushed it open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here this afternoon. But what I'd like to talk to you about is God's grace. You see, for many years in these rooms, I didn't feel God. I absolutely could not feel God. You would talk about God and you would tell me about your God. And I began to believe that you believed, but I just couldn't get that feeling inside of myself. And what I learned for me was that I had not taken the necessary action to produce a spiritual awakening, and that was to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they're laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, I ended up in a fancy jitter joint on April the 11th of 1977. And thanks to that treatment center, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and loving God, I haven't had a drink since. But what happened was, is it was one of those five-step treatment centers, and we did one of these inventories, one of those, like, I was born inventories. And what I found out was I thought I had worked a fourth and fifth step. But what I later learned was, is that makes a great novel, but does nothing for inventory. And what happened was, is I had not taken the action necessary to produce a spiritual awakening until I wrote that fourth step out in four columns, and until I read that fourth step to a sponsor, taking the fifth step. Because, you see, it wasn't until I had taken that action that I was able to see my part in what went on. And until I was willing to become responsible and accountable for my own actions, past and present, I could not begin to have a spiritual awakening because I was still a victim. And I have learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that most of our problems are of our own making. Thank God. Because, you see, if my problems are of anybody else's making, then you have to change for me to get better. But if my problems are of my making, then I have a set of steps that I can take. And if I take these steps, those steps will produce the necessary change to produce a spiritual awakening. And that's the promise in the 12th step. And that's what began to happen for me as I began to walk the roads of Alcoholics Anonymous. And newcomer, just hang on. You're in for a ride. It's the very best thing that you'll ever have happen to you. My life is so good, I can barely stand it. Great events have truly come to pass, and I would like to share my great events. When I was 3 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship, and he is absolutely the most wonderful man I know. And Dave and I have been married 15 and a half years, and I love Dave more today than I've ever loved him. And Dave and I were friends for 3 years. And we often say if we'd have known we were going to get married, we'd have never told each other the things we told each other. But we were friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. And at 3 years, I had been self-destructing in this program. Because, you see, I didn't understand that you have to reach out to another human being. And you have to love someone else in order to begin to feel good about yourself. You see, I've always been waiting for something to fix me. And I love this, what Clancy says. Clancy says that we are people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. Now, I was one of these people that wanted you to be responsible for me. I wanted you to be responsible for my happiness. I wanted you to be responsible. Now, in Texas, we call it puffing up. You know how when you just kind of puff up? And somebody says, what's wrong with you? Nothing. And it's like it was your responsibility to find out what was wrong with me. And then it was your responsibility to make me happy. And if you didn't, you didn't love me. I was never, ever willing to be responsible for myself. I always wanted somebody else to take responsibility for me. And what I began to do early in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is I began to self-destruct through relationships and sex. I just knew if you'll just love me enough, I'll be okay. I just knew if somebody would just love me enough. But you see, I didn't get it. It wasn't about you loving me. It was about me loving you. And it wasn't until I began to reach my hand out and care for another human being and began to practice the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is one alcoholic talking with another alcoholic. The beauty of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there's a guy in our AA, our home group, that says, there's nothing in the big book about sponsorship. Well, I'm not going to dispute him because I really haven't looked it up to find out. But I know that I learned when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't have a sponsor, then an idiot is running your life. And I am really grateful that I have always had a sponsor. And I have had someone to tell me the things that I needed to do and begin to show me how not to self-destruct anymore. Because I have never got up in the morning and said, let me just see how I can hurt Polly today. I believe what Chuck Chamberlain said, if I knew better, I'd do better. And I was doing the best I could. I was so desperate and so needy for love that what I began to do was self-destruct because I didn't know better. And it wasn't until you began to tell me to reach out and help another person. And it was like, Polly, we don't care if you don't have but 30 minutes more sobriety. You tell that person about your sobriety, and just maybe, you'll get better. Now, I'm here to tell you I hear things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is just for me because I'm glad they're not my thoughts, because all I have is me to go by. And I hear, well, if somebody wants it, they'll ask for it. Well, I'm here to tell you that I did not ask to be court committed to treatment. I have not asked to do much of anything in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taken by the hand and said, you will do this, you will do that, and I'm so glad that nobody waited for me to ask. And I am so grateful that I am still not too sober to call a newcomer and call them instead of them waiting to call me. I am so grateful because if people had treated me like that, you'd have another speaker today. Because it was the people in Alcoholics Anonymous reaching out to me and taking me by the hand and telling me things I didn't understand. But they told me to do them, and I did them. And thank God for the willingness. And I know today that the willingness is as much the grace as anything else. But Dave knew all these things about me. And what Dave said to me was, Miss Polly, I love you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. But Dave and I have had a relationship that is beyond my greatest expectation. And Dave and I didn't know how to have a relationship. I'm Dave's fourth wife, and Dave could marry a lot. And I was married 22 years before. I knew how to stick in there, and he knew how to do it a lot. And so we neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. We both knew how to take a hostage, but we hadn't a clue how to have a relationship. And we began to watch people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Ellen and Red were married a long time, and we watched Ellen and Red. And Ellen and Red were still taking people into their home and sobering them up, and I mean, they were just old-time AA, and they sponsored a lot of people. And there were two alkies hooked up, and they'd been married. When Red died, he and Ellen had been married 31 years. I want what they had. I want what they had. And then Dave and I got hooked up with this couple out in Omaha. And Dick and Peggy began to talk about working the traditions in your relationship. Wow, what a concept. One more time, as Sister B says, the recipe was in the book. And there was the recipe. And, you know, we read in our group, every meeting I go to in Southern California, they read, the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. And here Dave and I were a group. So we began to take the traditions and practice them in our relationship. And things began to grow. And I can remember what Frank told me when Dave and I were going to get married. And Frank said, Polly, you treat Dave like a newcomer. And how do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And he says, and if you will plant yourself firmly in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll be like two oak trees. You'll be planted firmly in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you will grow firm and straight. And one day you'll look up and you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. And I'm really grateful for those things that people taught us. And we were willing to go to any lengths to be able to have a good relationship. And today, I have a relationship beyond my greatest expectation, because my husband loves me and I love him. And the really beautiful thing is that I can trust that. Now, before I walk out here in the weeds and sound really spiritual, I want to talk about some of the surrenders that have happened recently. About 3 years ago, Dave lost his job, Now, Dave is a highly trained computer scientist, and it didn't seem like a big deal. You know, we just figured he'd just find another job. And pretty soon it was getting real evident that if he didn't get a job soon, we were going to lose our house. Now, I would stand up at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would tell you how I just know that this is God's will for us, and things are going to get better, and da-da-da-da. But I had this infliction in my voice that told you to feel sorry for me. Because, you see, it was real evident that we were going to lose this house. And we, in fact, did. And what happened was, is I realized how much ego I had. Because, see, things like this aren't supposed to happen to people who are 16 and 17 years sober. That is supposed to happen to newcomers, not people who've been around that long. And I had this ego that just didn't want you to see that we were having this kind of a problem. Because, see, I wanted you to think we were doing all these wonderful things at Alcoholics Anonymous. Other words, I wasn't accepting life on life's terms. That's what I couldn't do before the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us that we will have experiences that will level the pride. And what I needed was my pride leveled. Because somehow or another, I just wasn't willing to expect life on life's terms. And I had my fist at God. How can this be happening to me? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? Don't you see how much service I am in Alcoholics Anonymous? As if God should give me some reward for being sober. And the reward I get is the grace of not taking a drink for 19 years. That's the reward. And I'm really grateful today. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that that poor is better than not poor. Because I haven't got that spiritual yet. I like money better than not having money. But I know today that there are things much better than money. And I know that you can adjust your lifestyle and not need the things you thought you needed. Because, you see, we had this lifestyle that we definitely had to adjust. And I'm really grateful, and I always say that Dave and I are friends, and Dave and I were our lovers, but today Dave and I are partners. We walked through something that has helped us grow. And Dave and I are real active in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We both fulfill this program to the very best of our ability. And I believe that. And if nobody's told you that you're important today, please let me tell you that you are. Because you see, you may be the big book that nobody else can read. Because how I live my life outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is real necessary. Because you see, I never ever know who's watching. I don't know if my actions might be what will save somebody when they come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I do and how I practice the principles of this program outside of this room is very important. And I think the step is really clear. It says that I practice these principles in all my affairs. That doesn't mean I can go rip off my creditors. That doesn't mean that I can cheat on my husband. And that doesn't mean I can talk behind your back. That is not practicing the principles in all my affairs. I want to quickly tell you about my two sons. When I came to the rooms with Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew that my youngest son was a full-blown drug addict. And I used to go to meetings and say, how can this be happening? And that's when I heard, Polly, you suit up and show up because you may be the only big book James ever reads. And at 6.5 years of sobriety, James called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, he did not want what I had. 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school, and he said, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. James celebrated 12 years of sobriety on January the 3rd, and that's a great event that's come to pass. That's because of the program. My oldest son is one of our Al-Anons, and unfortunately, he's still untreated. But... Russ was the one who took care of me, and Russ was the one who put me to bed. And what would, an untreated Al-Anon do if their alcoholic sobered up, but go marry a practicing alcoholic. And she sobered up. And you see, Russ didn't have any purpose for living. Because, see, untreated Al-Anons, their purpose for living is people like you and me. And when he didn't have a purpose for living, Russ began to try to take his life. And I understood his desperation. And he began to mutilate himself, and he began to hurt himself. And I understood those things, because those are the things that I did. I know a lot about depression. I had a lot of depression in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and prior to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew what it was like to hurt myself physically so that you didn't have to feel it emotionally. So I understood his desperation, and I was powerless to help my child. And what finally happened was Russ divorced the lady in Texas and moved to Michigan and married another lady and moved to New Jersey. And a hell really began to take place. And a two-year period, my son tried to take his life 6 times. And I was devastated because, you see, I knew that God was big enough to take care of me, but I didn't believe that God was big enough to take care of Russ. And everybody would say, turn him over, turn him over, turn him over. And I just absolutely did not know how to do that. I didn't know how to turn him over. You know, it's like when somebody, you know, it's like I would just scream in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're saying that, but you're not telling me how. And I began to seek out how, and I found that in the rooms of Al-Anon. And what happened was, is I began to pray to be willing to let my son go. I simply could not let go. And I was just so afraid. See, today I understand what the fear was, that if I turn my son over to God, then God will take him. And that was what I was afraid of. And what happened was, is when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I was speaking, and this is really a neat thing, because I was in Atlanta last weekend. And 8 years ago, I was in Atlanta, I was in Albany, Georgia. And I was supposed to speak on a Saturday morning. And my daughter-in-law called me on the phone, and she told me that my son was in the hospital one more time. He had stuck a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I was devastated. I was totally torn down. And I just barely got through that talk. And this man walked up to me, and he said, Polly, he didn't say Polly, the way he did it, very southern, he said, young lady, you and I need to talk. And we need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is God's kid. And it's none of your business what God does with his kids. And you see, I had prayed for the willingness when this man appeared. And with his help, I was able to release my son. And my son entered the rooms of Al-Anon for a short period of time. But the good news is that my son hasn't tried to hurt himself in over 8 years. But the really good news is I didn't get to see that man that had carried me that message. But I got to see another man who had seen that man carry me that message. And he was so grateful that my son was doing good. And I just, you know, it was just so wonderful to be able to share in that experience again. And that's one more thing that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me. Now, I am ever reminded of the disease of alcoholism. All I have to do is look at my son's arms and look at the scars. Because, you see, the wounds heal, but the scars remain. And I'm really grateful today that I can look at his, that I know that those wounds have healed. But that I know that from time to time, those scars will come back to bite him. And that I understand that. And I understand that because you taught me to keep my eyes constantly on others. And that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I am to keep my thoughts constantly on others. And if I do that, then I'm not washed over with self and have to make excuses for my behavior so he should feel differently. And I'm really grateful that you have taught me that responsibility and accountability. The great events that have come to pass. On March the 23rd, 1993, a great event came to pass. And his name is Ryan David Klinger Lee. And he is my first grandchild. And I'm here to tell you he's the cutest little thing you have ever, ever seen. And we lovingly call him the Critter. And if you were at Bill W.'s big family reunion in San Diego, he was the main attraction. He was running around there with his head of blonde curly hair, and of course everybody was saying, "Oh, Polly, he looks like you," and of course I was just dying through all of that. It was just the best. But when Ryan was 18 months old, we got some devastating news, and we found out that Ryan was deaf. And one more time I had my fist at God. How can this be happening to me? Don't you see how many people I sponsor in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you see how much service I am? And one more time, my perception of reality was distorted. Because you see, there are no negatives in God's world. I only saw the negative. I didn't know the positive. And what has happened as a result of this little boy, is this little boy has brought a family together, families together, that was torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. Because you see, the only way we're ever going to communicate with this little boy is through sign language. And all of us have got together and are going to school to learn sign language. Kelly and her parents and James in Chicago. Dave and I and Russ and Cheryl in California. And my ex-husband and his wife and family in Texas. We're all coming together. And because of this little boy, he has brought together these families that were torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. And you see, I never ever knew that. And the healing that that little boy has brought. And I'm going to tell you two stories around that because I think that it is so miraculous because I'm so grateful because of this program. You have given me some eyes that I can see the gifts. You see, God used to give me gifts, and they were laying all around at my feet, but I couldn't see them. But because of this program and the 19 years you have given me, I have begun to see the gifts. And one of the gifts came with our daughter-in-law, Kelly, because she was pregnant with our second grandchild. And because of Ryan's impairment and his birth defect, she went to get a test with this baby. And she found out that she was almost ready to lose the baby she carried because no sign whatsoever. And they did a surgery on her, and then she had to go to bed rest for 5 months. We are sure that because Ryan is deaf, he saved his brother Christian's life. And Christian was born April the 16th, another beautiful baby boy. Great events will come to pass. One night I was speaking up in a place in Southern California called Rancho Cucamonga. And I went there to that meeting and, you know, just showing up like we all do. We're invited to a meeting to talk. And the secretary comes running up to me and he says, "Oh, Polly, I don't know what we're going to do. There's this lady's just come in the room. She has 4 days sober and she's deaf and she can't read lips." And I said, "Mike, it's okay. I can sign." And thank you, Ryan. Because of that, I was able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to this woman when she showed up at her first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Great events will come to pass. I never, ever knew that that was going to get to happen to me. Another great event that's coming to pass is we've got another grandchild due from my oldest son, Russ, and his wife, Cheryl, in September. And I just want to tell you what you've done. James and Kelly are the very best parents I've ever seen. You see, James has 12 years of sobriety, and Kelly has 7. And they're active members of the North Shore Alano Group in Evanston, Illinois. And because of you, they have been able to be selfless and to do all the things they need to do to take care of Ryan and the new baby. And believe me, if you have a child like this, it takes a lot of energy. But they do it uncomplaining and with all the love I've ever seen. And even though Russ and Cheryl are not in the program with Alcoholics Anonymous, they get to see you in action every day. Because you see, the rest of us are the big book they cannot read. And that's the thing that you taught us to be, is to be the big book that no one else could read. The gifts I have received in this program are beyond anything that I expected. I didn't know what I wanted out of life, but what I have been given is I have been given love. And most of all, what you have given me is you have given me the sense of usefulness. I feel useful thanks to you. I am able to take this program and work it in all my affairs. And every time I reach my hand out to a new alcoholic, they may or may not stay sober, but I cannot tell you how good it makes me feel to have the opportunity to tell them about our precious program. If you'd have told me to make a list of all the things that I wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that He's given me. He has given me a loving husband and loving children. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has left me, I would have settled for so much less. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you've breathed life into me. And I'm the very best Polly I've ever been. And I know that if I continue to suit up and show up one day at a time, I will continue to get better. And you know, it's real important to me that we keep AA the way it is. I'm so grateful that I hang around with a lot of old-timers. And you know, I don't want this program diluted with Freudian concepts. I don't want to hear psychobabble in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to hear the steps, because if psychobabble worked, we'd have never needed a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't work. We needed the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in order to produce a spiritual awakening. I want these rooms just like they were when I came here 19 years ago. I want them just like they were when James came here 12 years ago. Because you know something, folks? I think Ryan's going to need you. When you run tests on little babies, you have to put them to sleep. And what we did is we had to find out the extent of Ryan's deafness. And so we took him to the doctor to run this test, and they gave him the medication, and nothing happened. And they gave him the medication, and nothing happened. And they gave him the medication, and he finally went to sleep. And when he came to, he was doing this. That's more in sign language. Cherish this program as if your very life depended on it, because it does. I am grateful today that I am a woman that I am proud of. I'm the woman I always wanted to be. I'm self-supporting through my own contribution. I am faithful and true to one man for 15 years. But a gift you have given me beyond any was that I always felt so guilty because of what had happened to my children. But thanks to this program, my children have told me, Mom, you are the mom we always wanted you to be. And I'm here to tell you, my friends, that's a great event that's come to pass. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer, and I end my AA talks with it, because it's what this fellowship means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. God bless. I love you.